sutta is discussed here in Samyutta Nikaya, Kanda Samyutta, Theravagga, Katsavati. On that occasion, Venerable Tissa, the Blessed One's parent or cousin, told a large number of monks, "Friends, it is as if my body is dropped. I have lost my bearings. Things aren't clear to me. My mind keeps being overwhelmed with sloth and torpor. I lead the holy life dissatisfied. I have uncertainty about the teachings." So he has got this thina with the, you know, the sloth and torpor. He doesn't feel like doing anything. There's no going forward in the Dhamma. Then a large number of monks went to the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. As they were sitting there, they told him, "Lord Venerable Tissa, the Blessed One's parent or cousin, has told a large number of monks, friends, it is as if my body is dropped. I have lost my bearings. Things aren't clear to me. My mind keeps being overwhelmed with sloth and torpor. I lead the holy life dissatisfied. I have uncertainty about the teaching." So the sloth and torpor is the mental state. It is sickness of the mind and the sickness of the mental state. Like if we stay in dark places, we feel sleepy. If we eat quite a lot, we feel sort of sleepy. That sort of. Then the Blessed One told a certain monk, "Come, monk, in my name, call this, saying the teacher calls you, my friend." "As you say, Lord," the monk answered, and having gone to enter with this, on arrival, he said, "The teacher calls you, my friend." "As you say, my friend," Venerable Tissa replied. Then he went to the Blessed One, and on arrival, having bowed down to him, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, the Blessed One said to him, "Is it true, Tissa, that you have told a large number of monks, friends, it is as if my body is trapped. I have lost my bearings. Things aren't clear to me. My mind keeps being overwhelmed with sloth and torpor. I lead the holy life dissatisfied. I have uncertainty about the teaching." "Yes, Lord." "What do you think, Tissa, in one who is not without passion?" That is, that person is not devoid of lust, desire, love, thirst, fever, and craving for form. "Does there arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, despair from change and alteration in his form?" So that person is not devoid of lust, so he has got this clinging and craving, and so that particular form, whatever the form that he is clinging, it's changing, altered, you know, changing. So because of that one, would that person get sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, all those things? So he replied, "Yes, Lord." And there is a good discourse. So here in Connected Discourses of the Buddha, again, Sanghita Nikaya, it's called Agitation Through Clinging. And I will just read that one paragraph with it. And Buddha said that, "Bhikkhu, I will teach you agitation through clinging and non-agitation through non-clinging. Listen to that and attend closely, I will speak." So Buddha said, "And how, Bhikkhu, is there agitation through clinging?" Here, Bhikkhu, the uninstructed worldling, who is not seer of the noble ones, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who is not a seer's superior persons, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, regards form as self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. That form of his changes and alters. With the change and alteration of form, his consciousness becomes preoccupied with the change of form. Agitation and constellation of mental states, born of preoccupation with the change of form, remain obsessing his mind. Because his mind is obsessed, he is frightened, distressed, and anxious, and through clinging he becomes agitated. So this person is regarding that form as mine, in the sense that, let's say, someone is actually taking stock, buying stocks, stock market, okay, both the stocks, and then stocks goes up, down, sort of thing. If it is going up, he's happy, but when it is going down, now his mind is preoccupied about that stocks that he has bought. And this one is actually now going down, and he is always checking this one, and he is so upset about that Actually, I had a friend, my neighbor, next door neighbor in Brunei. He's a lecturer. And at night time, 2 o'clock, midnight, he's smoking and going around that this thing. Because he has bought his stocks. He has invested money on that one. He can't sleep because the market is going down. He can't sleep because he's completely, his mind preoccupied about that thing. And with the, that the form changes, the mind changes. There's no escape because it keep going back to the same thing again and again. So that's the agitation through through clinging.
Does the same thing applies to our own body as well? Like how we get old and getting sick?
Yes. When you go old and you know that you get the wrinkling of the body and you know aches, aches there and that one and gray hair, teeth fallen out and that time. That when you look at yourself, then you have this got this thing. Unless you got rid of it, this particular thought about this this form. That's the biggest one. The stock market is a tiny little in that respect, but people take those things as very heavy. And our own body, because mind depends on the body, so we are going crazy. People are going crazy, and the body is affected. So
yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, more than those things are gradual things. If sudden things happen, like death of any immediate family member or anything, something like discovery of cancer, something like that, and
yes.
Then well affected.
Yes. Yeah, they are very strong things. Yeah. So that is this how the agitation to clinging comes from that one. So. And then good is good. That is how it is for one who is not without passion for forms. What do you think? This in one who is not without passion, desire, love, thirst, fever, and craving for feeling, perception, fabrications is volitional formations here. Thus there arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, despair. From change and alteration in his fabrications. Now, all these things, whatever thing that feeling that we have, we hold dear to us, when it change, when we have this same problem. There was a time actually, for me, it was not the form that matters, it was the feeling that matters for me. So I was meditating about the feeling and I was so sensitive to this feeling, changing of this feeling. And even the Brahma world, the problem over there is that the change of feeling. When the feeling changes, they have this suffering. The body part is not like ours, but that's so significant.
Well, the action of the mind. I had a friend. She had a stroke in her 20s, and she lost her left side. She couldn't use that side of the body, but also her mind became quite a bit scrambled. She couldn't remember things that had happened, and I'm quite attached to each side of my body, but I think I'm particularly attached to my mind working clearly. So when she couldn't think through things, do simple jobs anymore because she couldn't focus, I think that was probably the hardest part for her life.
Yes.
Losing half the body was hard, but losing the clarity of mind was
mind,
worse.
Yeah. Then you lose your place in the society. Mm. That's what the people feel, I lost. I can't be fully functional in a society sort of thing. So then you see that we have this aspiration, be in this society, that society, sort of thing, to a class, right? It's the conceit, mana. And then that I can't function properly in that one. It's like that, let's say you have hearing problems and you will be among the people who can actually hear and speak. You are there, you can't hear. So there is a big issue over here. Like that, the blind, unless you put yourself thoroughly in that state from your mind, imagining and looking at the other people, how they actually behave and how they suffer. For example, blind man and how he's actually suffering. If you imagine for a second that my eyesight can go down, and then how do I go to toilet? How do I cross the road? How do I get into the bus? How do I get my shopping? How do I get my food? Everything, if you think about it, that those are sort of part and parcel in our life right now. We don't think that, that we are using the eye. But imagine, you can't even walk from one room to another your close eyes without hitting something. It's that bad. So how those people are suffering. And so the mind is the biggest one. Then, you know, when it goes, it's really bad.
When one's mind is affected, doesn't that mean that that person cannot think as a normal person?
Yes.
So therefore, how does it really work? Like, when a person cannot think as a person, you have the body, you have a brain that is not dead, but it's not thinking clearly. So how can we say that that person has got a clear way of thinking of...
That person hasn't got a clear way of thinking. So what Buddha said, that in this, there are a number of discourses where Buddha is saying mind is intact. As a person to go forward, mind got to be intact.
Yes.
So that means it's not broken, it's not corrupted in that way.
Yes.
If it has happened, then it is big loss.
So all these people who are in mental institutions, like they just keep watching through the window and no one knows what they're thinking. So they're not actually, their minds are not actually functioning, are they?
No, they're not working properly. Yeah. But the, you know, the karma for that one, why we become mentally sick, is alcohol, drinking alcohol, taking alcohol very often. And Buddha said that if someone do that one, he will be born in hell, animal realm, or plane of departed. But by any chance, if he is born as a human being, he'll be a mad person. Now you can see that a drinking person, when he was living in this world also, you can see that person is mad. Mm-hmm. His behavior is bad. I know someone in a lecturer who used to drink alcohol, and he is lying down on those drains and type things in Sri Lanka. And students are looking at him, you know, that. So while he is living, he is mad. When he passes away, because what is he practicing and what is he actually getting? So, yeah, so that's why Buddha is asking people to prevent, drinking alcohol, like that.
And again, if they have any sort of thinking, what they do is that correcting that
karma.
Karma, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm. Either because of the pain or that not, that they can do things and they get hate.
Mm.
And then they can go with others. So.
Mm. Yes.
Or otherwise, you suffer even though they don't say that they are in sadness all the time, isn't it? That's a bad karma too.
Yes. And they get sloth and torpor. That is the sickness of the mind and sickness of mental state. That's the immediate thing. So one can't meditate and sort of thing. That's one consequence. Yeah.
Well, some people, I also had that perception that if you, at certain stage, because if you take alcohol and then behave, making more noise to others, that will be all right. But now I realize it is not the case, because it is a small part of things.
That's right.
But bigger part comes with your mind. And if you drink and behave, that means if you are drinking, you allow a mental state where you have some sort of disorder. If you allow that, you get back in the next life.
Oh, I mean, it is killing cells anyway, medically. So then good. That is how it is for one who is not without passion for qualifications. What do you think, sir? In one who is not without passion, desire, love, thirst, fever, and craving for consciousness, does there arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair from change and alteration of his consciousness? Yes, sir. So the consciousness, when the consciousness is changing, also we have the same thing. We have I, we got the form, and then I, depending on the two, the I consciousness arises. So this I consciousness is also changing and becoming ear consciousness. Let's say I'm looking at something, I'm happy to look at that one, and somebody is over here disturbing me, right? And then because of the noise, I get the ear consciousness, so I'm unhappy, the change of my consciousness as well. So it's alters all the time. So again, the agitation, all those things comes because of that. Good is good. That is how it for one who is not without passion for consciousness. Now, what do you think this, sir? In one who is without passion, desire, love, thirst, fever, and craving for home, does there arise sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair from change and alteration of this form? No, Lord. Good, this is good. That is how it is for one who is without passion for form. So again, Buddha is asking about the feeling, perception, fabrications, volitional formation, and consciousness. All five. So we have this matter, feeling, perception, volitional formation, and consciousness. Regarding these five, if there is no craving, if there is no passion for those things, whether those things are older or not, I don't care. I don't mind. So Buddha asked certain monks, showing those some grasses outside, what do you think when people come and cut it and take it and do whatever thing they want with that one? Do you get upset about it? Monk said no, because that one is not theirs, not mine. The grass over there in that land drive is not mine. I don't care whatever thing it is happening to that one. But if I actually regard that one as mine because of even for the beauty, you know, that is nice, so therefore, you know, sort of thing, because I'm clinging to that one. Then there is someone say that, well, someone has burned that beautiful grass, then there is some sort of feeling arises over it. But it may be happening in Afghanistan, I don't care, because I don't know, and I have not seen. And so it is, if it is in our range, and if there is some sort of clinging or desire for that one, that's the problem. If there's no clinging for that thing, you know, so many troubles in over there and other worlds, you know, but I don't care.
So if someone comes and does something terribly cruel to some other people or to the grass, it ideally make no difference to you? Like you wouldn't care what happened to them?
No, no, what I'm saying here, if I don't have, not me I'm talking about, if I don't have any craving for that, then that's fine. It doesn't make any difference. This is the same state you can achieve by attaining the fourth jhana level, for example, higher concentration level. At that time, a bomb can go on or a gun can fire, but you don't bother because you are in the don't care state. So, we discussed that day as well, but if in that particular case, if you don't care, if you are in the don't care state, then even the cruelty can happen. But if you have the don't care state with wisdom, then you have the loving kindness, compassion, and all those things. So you don't do it, but others do it. Well, if there is a possibility for you, you might sort of do something, or you might ignore it.
Yeah, it's something like that, isn't it? It's out of compassion you can do things, and even you are liberated. So out of compassion, you do things, isn't it, to save a life or something like that. But you do that, but you're not attached to that. You still can do that.
Yeah. Whether that person is actually, let's say we sort of take a puppy or someone, you know, they're drowning, and then, you know, after that one, then we are happy and, you know, cuddling and all those things. So we have the attachment to those things, right? So an arahant, for example, if he saves that one, it's just for the sake of saving that one. That's it, no further than that one. And we cling to many things. We do certain things not because that we want to save that one, but because all others might blame me. Oh, others might praise me if I actually save that one. Our thoughts are not pure. So therefore we have to do certain things. So is all those things happen with the craving. Buddha said that if someone is cutting his one limbs over here with a, you know, whatever weapon, and someone rubbing oil on this hand, he has no aversion for the person who is cutting his arm, no clinging for the, you know, the any praise for the person who is rubbing this thing either. So it's free in that level. It is that it's the liberation of the mind. When the mind got liberated, well, it doesn't care about any of those things, because they know that those things are not mine. Since we are holding these things as mine, whatever thing we see, whatever thing we hear, that's our problem. We hold it, and then we have the agitation through clinging. When those things are changing, we are upset about it. So this consciousness, if someone is free from that one, there is no agitation. Now, so Buddha said that is how for one who without passion for consciousness. What do you think this is form? Constant or inconstant? That is that permanent or impermanent? That's what the question is. Impermanent, Lord. And is that which is impermanent or inconstant, is suffering or happiness? And it's translated as easeful or stressful. It is this suffering or happiness is the better way of wording it. It is suffering, Lord. So if something is impermanent, then it is suffering. And then all our discussions so far is that whatever the form and feeling, when it is changing, that's our problem. Then is it fitting to regard what is impermanent, suffering, subject to change, as this is mine, this is myself, this is what I am? No, Lord. So similarly, is feeling impermanent or permanent? So it is impermanent. And I think, so Buddha went through this perception, volitional formation and consciousness. Now probably we should look at to understand what it means by over here in that particular diagram. So first you can see that we have this agreeable object. So with the agreeable object there is this contact to be felt as pleasant. So then there is pleasant feeling arises out of that one. Now our problem is that we perceive this feeling as pleasurable, that this is pleasure. Now there is this volition or chetana in Pali. Volition coordinate. It's like this, the monitor in the class. You know, monitor in the class, he has got his own saying and he coordinate what others say. Like that one, it's a volition, chetana. It's something to do with craving again. So volition coordinates what I feel and what I perceive. So volition sort of aware, is a mental state, and aware of this thing. And so the next two are actually Dhamma. There is self in thought is the view. That when you have the consciousness, chitta, let's say I see something from the eye, then eye consciousness arises. And with that one, then there is this view that I am, I perceive, I see, I hear, all those things, there is this view that come to me.
That's it. I mean, it's not known, but it is there, isn't it?
It is there. And there is permanence in mental states. Mental is the ignorance, avijja. Mental states there are 52 mental states according to Abhidhamma. Craving is one, contact is one, feeling is another. Perception is another, volition is another, so initial application, sustained application, you know, loving kindness, all those things are sort of mental states. Good ones, moral ones, immoral ones, there are 52 of them. Now we think these are permanent. You see, this is a very key point to understand. If you have a feeling, whatever the feeling that you have regarding some food you are eating, or some sort of a pleasure that you have, aren't you actually, without knowing, think that this is permanent? Because what we do, we have this feeling, I like it, so I want it. I'm not thinking that this is impermanent and going away. I want it tomorrow, I want it day after tomorrow, I want it for the rest of my life. So that's the impermanent thing, that because of the ignorance, we actually think that it is permanent. So that is the ignorance. We are thoroughly thinking these things without knowing that all these things are impermanent. What we do not know here is all of them are constructed. This feeling that I have is constructed. For example, that maybe there's some sort of a food. I taste it. I say, oh, that's really nice. Someone might come in and he perceive it and they might say, that's not nice. That's not right. I don't like it. How come? Because this one was actually constructed by my mind because it suits my, you know, conditions.
Isn't that the vijnana?
It is aware. Vijnana is aware of that one. But the volitional formation construct that one. Habitual tendency. It could even happen even though you don't actually you don't actually really feel it that way, but you used to say it to satisfy others, right? Then smoking, for example, you know that young children, they sort of that they know that this is bad, that they cough and all those things are coming up. But then they have these other views coming up. Oh, when you are smoking, then you are considered as a big guy or someone like that. And so they actually do that, right? You know, with the cough and all those things. So they got that illusion. And I am big. You know, I am sort of grown up sort of thing. So they are doing that one. So now their feeling is not actually that smoking, that the feeling that they actually constructed the attitude. So those are habitual tendencies or called volitional formations. Buddha said volitional formation construct, condition form as form, condition feeling as feeling, condition perception as perception, condition volitional formation as volitional formation, condition consciousness as consciousness. It is constructing everything for you. That is your own habit, like that I used to drive a car, I know how to drive a car, then it is driving the car. So I have trained myself before, I do that. I regard these feelings as pleasurable, I used to regard that one as pleasurable, so I then keep on regarding that one as pleasurable. So that's how we train. So our karma, that is what we have done. So if you take these two very heavily to the mind, that is, there is self in thought. Whenever you have the consciousness, there is this view, I am. There is permanence in mental states, that is the ignorance part, right? Now, if someone got this thing, now I said that volitional coordinate these things, right? So the if from action point of view, now what is happening is that there is this volition and there is this perception of permanence about it. So we have some sort of a volition. And that remember always that when you say volition, that most significant part of that one was the feeling. There was this feeling, pleasurable feeling or displeasure feeling, and so there is this accordingly happening. So, volition lead to the thought. That is, volitional formation actually construct the thought. It construct what is consciousness. My consciousness is, and when I see this particular one, I would say it's a carpet. When I see a sort of a chair, that shape thing, I would say that's a chair. But how do I know that it one is chair?
Then it is the volitional formation, is the recognition state. That's the state that you recognize something, isn't it?
Perception was coordinated. It's not perception alone. Volition has got other ingredients. It's the biggest one to understand in that sense. Volition has got these many characteristics. Whatever mental states you have at that time, they all coordinated. Like a number of people in the class, well, when they are raising their hands, then this so monitor knows that. Well, 10 people raised their hand and 10 others didn't do it. So he knows every state. And he has got his own idea as well because of his former things. Right? Like that, the perception is known, the feeling is known to the volition, and everything else is also known. So contact is also known. So the volition coordinates whole thing. Now, if I say in a different word, and what is volition? Is regarding the sensual things, sensual pleasures. If you are connected with it, connected, and we are using it, and if you are remain holding it, that is called volition. Okay? Simply put in, that's the way. Whatever the sensual pleasures, we are connected with it, we are using it, and we remain holding to it. That is volition.
So, does an arahant have volition?
No, they don't. They don't. Because if there is volition, there is this volitional formation, sanskara, they are free from that one. But they can recognize certain things as this one. So, there is pure perception about it. They know the impermanent nature and all those things.
But
so, that
is
this
not
is not simply, this one is not simply the knowing it, that this is a red carpet. It's not on that one. But we have the craving about it, with or without you knowing, we are remain holding to it. Although this carpet, we may not sort of like it, but if someone is coming over here and trying to steal it, well, some of us might try to stop it. So there is some craving over here.
That's why, because we can if you see this carpet, you remember that it has some yellow things and red and all these things, because even though we don't really feel that at that time, but there is some sort of clinging to that.
Inside that, mm-hmm. yeah, underneath, mm-hmm. our tendency is there. You know that we may not like this building, but if someone is trying to harm, there is. So then it is, you know, coming to the surface that is the case that I have this thing. And you, even in your house, maybe there is something that you don't even, I don't want that one, you know, sort of thing. You don't care about it. If someone is coming to steal it, well, then you can see, well, you have that thought about it. So it is, we are that bad. We are holding to even junk. Buddha said our mind even can, very tiny little things it is holding to. Is you can see with the children, you know, that they in the school or that one, sort of when they are playing certain things, they don't care about certain things. But if someone is trying to get it, that's the time when they fight and everything start with that. So we do not know what we are clinging to until you actually go into a higher state, and then you realize that. That's why Buddha said that develop the mind, make it vast, make it immeasurable. When you do that one, then you see the craving that you have. That's why we need to go into the higher concentration. When you go into the higher concentration, you can see what are the things that hold in me. And then only you can get out of it. So, volition, construct this thought. So, remember that volition has got the perception of permanency here. So, I have the perception of permanency, and the thought that arises depending on that one has got the perception of permanency as well. Now I am thinking that this thing is mine. I do not know that it is impermanent. Therefore, this I'm not happy to let it go. Whatever the feeling I have, I am holding to it because it's permanent. If I know it is impermanent, I can let it go. So that is actually action point of view, what is happening over there. And then look at the next one is karma point of view. Now we have done this bad part, okay. Now this example, this diagram should not be taken as it is, in the sense that it is not because of that he has got the volition, that perception of permanence, that he's actually got this inequality in existence and property. He got the inequality in existence and property. Let's take a good example. To understand this, the second part of the diagram, the last one, let's take a beautiful young girl, about 16 years of age. Now, she is beautiful. Because she is beautiful, isn't that she is sort of arrogant? I got this sort of body, I'm beautiful, others are looking at me, and sort of thing. See? So, that is inequality in the existence, bhava in Pali. And there is this inequality in properties. I got a Benz car, I got a big house, I got a land, all those things. You know, my parents are such and such. Like that one. You know, that there is this inequality in property. So, when we have this inequality of existence and inequality of property.
What do you mean that inequality here is?
This difference that I do have, you don't have. Either you do have, I don't have. That's the inequality. In Pali word is really, really nice. Bhavam bhogancha, vokara, ahankarasa padattana. Bhava, bhoga. You know the single bhoga word? Yeah. You have that one. And then you have, what we get is ahankara. Ahankara is that I making. So that young girl is now making, I am beautiful. Others are looking at me. I am beautiful. You know, I got this one. My skin color, all those things are there. So, what is it happening? It's happening because of this bhava or inequality existence, because of the existence. And this I-making is leading to the perception of self. That is the closest condition to make the perception of self. Self I am. You know, having got a sort of a body, beauty or whatever thing it is, and become arrogant and all those things, and there is this I-making. And because of the I-making, there is this perception of self. Now, when the perception of self is there, has the characteristic of approaching about ideas. So, that is the characteristic. Characteristic of perception of self is the approaching about idea. Idea here is the perception and volition. So what makes her beautiful? Because that person was having done, so then they might hear Dhamma or something, that you became beautiful because you have given, you know, dana, alms giving, and all those things, good things we have done, sort of things. So whatever the volition that lead to that one, that person is going back to that. So it's like that dog tied into that thing is going back to the same thing again and again.
But not to the same place though.
Not to the same place. But that person is actually happy about that cycle. Right?
Yeah.
So she forgot to remember that she's not really 16 years old, she's not really beautiful, it's just something that's passing and she's, well, no, really her bones are going to turn to dust. And
But that person does not know about the impermanent nature, not thinking about the impermanent nature. So that's the bad part over here. There is volition. Volition makes this thing that person does not know that I am going to, you know, pass away, I am going to get withered. They are not thinking at that time because that ignorant level of ignorant at that time cannot think.
Not even that time. I mean, ignorance is always
always there,
and it changes with the time, depending on the situation.
Mm. Yes,
and may not be the beauty after about 10 years.
Yes, and then they actually have the regret. You know, the change of form, alteration that the first part we were discussing is there after that one. So, because I used to be like that one and now people don't care about me and sort of thing and all those things happen. So, that's one extreme example, you know, that to think about these things and one can remember. So, what is important over here is that how we go back to the same state again and again. So what we are trying to understand over here, how we get this self-identity view. So you can see it's something to do with that feeling that we had. And then there is this another discourse over here. Buddha is saying that one regards form as self. That regarding is a formation. That's how the volitional formation come to be. Sanskara, volitional formation, because of that regard. And then Buddha asks, what is the root, what is the cause of this regarding? It is that the ignorant contact. Our contact is ignorant. Because of the ignorant contact, there is this feeling in the first part of the diagram. For that feeling, there is craving. So because of that craving, that is how this is born. So this self is formed by this through the craving. So the craving is the thing. So feeling was the condition for that craving. So that we, whenever we think about the self, think it is something to do with the craving. Craving that we have, we are holding. So that's how it goes. So all these examples shows it in a different aspect of it.
So the term I comes from craving.
It is. If there is no craving, and I making is actually twofold. You know, I making and there's my making. So it's called mamankara in Pali. So that there is this one diagram is this one. You know, that the last part of this diagram is that one way of happening. And the other one is we cling into the properties, things. You know, that cars, houses and all the other things, feel the, you know, whatever we can acquire sort of thing. So because of that one, then we get the pleasurable feeling. Having acquired, we get the pleasure. And the pleasure is going back to the same thing. You know, what actually it's creating, the contact, the outer contact for that pleasurable thing. So it's going back to the same thing. So there are two parts. And the Sakkaya Ditti, for example, identity view, is not it is not the complete this self thing. This I making, my making is together. When one has got rid of this, one has developed the anatta sanya or the perception of not self, he get rid of both. So the Sakkaya Ditti, or that is the identity view, get rid of only part of it. So it's very difficult, and this has got a quite a bit of a background around this one. It is happening from those four parts, the edible food parts. This is one part that I covered out of it.
there is no use of even understanding is good, discussing about Dhamma and all these things, but not experiencing this when you meditate, so you cannot get the benefits out of this, isn't it? Because it's you cannot get rid of anything if you don't experience it.
First, you need to understand that this is the process, this is the way that it is happening. First, you are not getting rid of it. You can't do that. First, you understand, yes, there is this I, there is this form. So, depending on the two, I consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. So, with the contact, there is this feeling. So, this craving. And this is how that I come to arise. And then you are now try to understand the other way around. With the cessation of this, you know, that I consciousness and all those things. And this is the cessation of the whole thing. So, this process is thoroughly analyzed and understood in that respect. So there is this understanding then that the identity view, Sakkaya Ditti, is broken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got rid of that one. So that is the part of wisdom. It's not the total wisdom, but there is this part of wisdom that you got rid of one part of ignorance, like a small torch.
But you practice the same thing after that now. And even though you get rid of Sakkaya
Ditti. Yes, but that is very, very, very... The effect is very low.
Mm-hmm.
You see that it's like that red hot iron plate. If you know that one is red hot and you touch it lightly,
mm-hmm.
you practice it, that is true, you have the little bit of that one. Because you have been doing that one for a long, long time. That's the issue. So there is that some element of this thing. Now, so this is that... So, the feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness, all those things are impermanent, suffering. And so, whatever thing it is suffering, it is not fitting, it is not befitting to regard as this is mine. That is the understanding that one has to develop. If it is suffering, why would I take this one as mine? This I am. So, think about that one thoroughly. Why would I take, if it is something suffering, why would I take it as mine? This I am. So, that's the practice one has to develop, leading to the not-self. Thus, this any form whatsoever that is past, future or present, internal or external, latent or subtle, common or sublime, far or near, every form is to be seen as it actually is with right discernment, right wisdom. This is not mine, this is not myself, this is not what I am. So, there are 11 terms mentioned over here, that is whatever thing that is past. We might, sometimes we hold into past feelings very heavily, what I used to have. And we hold future feelings, you know, the feeling, having seen others, how they are, we hold into that one, that those feelings as well. And the present ones, and there are gross ones, and internal, external, and far or near. So every form, every feeling, every perception that we should understand. So there are 11 into 555 terms over there. That this is not mine, this is not myself. And seeing thus, the instructed disciple of the noble ones grows disenchanted with form, disenchanted with feeling. So, well, this disenchanted is sort of, I don't feel that one is proper. It has got a bit of a meaning. Some people translate this one as revulsion towards form. Some people translate it as turning away. You know, turning away of the form. Because that form, this one is not mine, then I turn away from that one. If this feeling is not mine, I turn away because it's subject to suffering and lead to suffering. I don't want it and I turn away from that. So, since someone turned away, then there is dispassion. And since there is dispassion, his mind gets liberated. And then when there is liberation, there is knowledge. So there are three kinds of liberations. That the liberation by signless is one. Liberation by desirelessness is another. Liberation by voidness is another. So the liberation by voidness is that one is thinking this is void of self or what belongs to self. Just keep on contemplating that this is not mine. This perception, feeling, all those things are not mine. Keep on contemplating. So, if there is no misinterpretation when he is doing that one, then he actually reached the seventh jhana level, seventh concentration level, and he reached the liberation there, because he is not now regarding anything as mine. Whatever the feeling, whatever the thoughts, you can do this one, you can keep on practicing with the concentration. But if you get into something that what about that one is still mine or sort of thing, then you are fallen. But if you can maintain this one, I tell you can reach that. It's just keep on contemplating about the suffering. When you contemplate about the suffering, then your mind tend to get rid of all these things. This is leading to suffering, this is suffering, and I feel suffering, I don't want these things, so therefore it's not mine. Whatever thing suffering is not befitting to regard as mine, so leave it out. By giving it up, one reaches that one. Now, you might reach that one for a tiny, 1/100th of a second. You need to develop your mind so that you can maintain that level, not falling out of that. So one goes into that voidness level, and then he has no misinterpretation. So that is the liberation by voidness. And this liberation by desirelessness is that he contemplate that this is void of self, or what belongs to self. And then he has no desire for those things, because he was contemplating that these things are suffering. So then there is no desire. So that's called desireless liberation. And the third one is that again he going for this liberation, that void of self and void of things that are pertaining to self. And so then he see no sign of permanence in those things. So there's this, it's called liberation by signlessness. So because of these liberations, then the knowledge comes when the mind is liberated at that level. So this as if there were two men, one not skilled in the path, the other skilled in the path. In that case, the man not skilled in the path would ask the man skilled in the path about the path. That is, if someone were to go to Sydney and then he's asking about the, how do I go there? The second man would say, come good man, this is the path, go alone it a little further and you will seek a fork in the road. Avoiding the left fork, take the right one. And go alone a little further and you will see an intense forest grove. Go alone a little further and you will see a large marsh swamp. Go alone a little further and you will see a deep drop off. Go alone a little further and you will see a delightful stretch of level ground. I have made this comparison. This is to convey a meaning. The meaning is this. The man unskilled in the path stand for is a run of the mill person, is the ordinary person. The man skilled in the path stand for is the Tathagata, is the Buddha. Worthy, rightly self-awakened. The fork in the road stand for uncertainty. In the Vichikicca, right. The left fork stands for eightfold wrong path. That is wrong view, wrong resolve, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness and wrong concentration. You see that we have been travelling in that left path for a long, long time, right? Because Buddha was not there. That's why because we have travelling in that path, that's why we got the delusion, ignorance. Because of travelling through the wrong eightfold path, we get moha, the ignorant. That's the main condition. And the right fork stands for the noble eightfold path. That is right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. The intense forest grove stands for ignorance. It's a thick forest. The large mass swamp stands for sensual desires. The deep drop off stands for anger and despair. So Buddha was telling the anger is the steep descent. You go in very fast in that one. The delightful stretch of level ground stands for unbinding, that is Nibbana. That's the Nibbana. Rejoice this, rejoice. I am here to exhort you. I am here to aid you. I am here to instruct you. So Buddha said, I will help you by instructions. I will guide you in these instructions. So rejoice. That is what Blessed One said. Gratified Venerable Tissa, delighted in the Blessed One's word. So Buddha saved that person, going out of this Buddha Sasana.
In that example, to go to the flat land, is to go to this end. So that means, does that mean that?
You need to get rid of that one. You need to get rid of you are living in that situation. You are living in the sensual desire world. And then you have the anger. One has to get rid of the sensual desire and the anger. And then you reach the Nibbana.
Well, do you have to go past it? Because you could imagine that there is a cliff you don't want to go off and the level ground as you keep going along and it's level at the same level you were at. So you don't necessarily have to go down to get to a place which is flat.
You can develop dhyana, concentrations and that one. You can go. So that's the way, other way.
That's what happens anyway during meditation if you get a bad feeling.
Mm.
So that's what where you go down anyway. So you can, unless you know that you are in there, you cannot come up to back to the meditation because you will be there for hours and hours thinking about the same thing. Mm. But not
blaming someone, he does not know.
Mm.
And we keep on doing that. And we go through that sensual desires and the anger that is happening. Unless someone is an ascetic sort of thing. But even for ascetics, those things are coming up. Because the Buddha is saying, you know, after practicing for that many eons to become the Buddha, Buddha says that this sensual thoughts arose in me while I was a bodhisattva. You know, then he was thinking that this sensual desire has arisen in me. And it is harmful to me and harmful to others. And when he was thinking that one, then that particular one subsides.
When you meditate, actually, you can see why you have to, at Buddha's time, why people went and sort of became monks. And because, see what happens when we try to meditate. Now, we sometimes our mind goes to work or with children, whatever it is, and all housework, because we do have other
commitments.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Buddha said household life is dusty.
Mm.
It is dusty because that Buddha said that the going forth is in the opening those days, and so one can practice very well.
And again, you can realize it very well because if you take 1 or 2 weeks leave and then do that, because you don't have work commitment. You can do the meditation or read the Dhamma very, very easily.
Yes. Should realize how much our mind gets corrupted because of the association in the workplace, you know, things we do. And even watching news, you know, can take you in a certain angry path and a desire path. As well. Not to speak about the dramas and all those, and you know, the other things. Even the news can do to a certain extent.
When a lay person gives up everything, and if that person doesn't become a monk, that person is going to become a beggar, right?
Well, you can't give up everything. A lay person or even a monk can't give up everything. Because there's holding. Until your mind gets liberated, there is holding even to your body, or to your mind, or to your feeling. When it's not just material things that giving up you are talking about over here, material things are. If you, first when you actually meditate, you would think, well, the material things are the biggest thing. Okay. Now you can experience this one very nicely if you contemplate about the death meditation. And then at that time, if you think, I'm dying for a moment, you know, just imagine I'm actually dying. And when you think in that shoe and think in that line properly, and then the first you might get this mundane thought about, okay, so the house, you know, okay, what about children or wife or whatever it is. And then if you properly meditate, then you think, well, not these things. I mean, let's say you got rid of by that thought that day. Well, it's not the house. I don't care about the house. So you are out of that one. And then your ignorant mind produces something. Oh, what about this? You know, the Benz car, your car, or your work, or something, or children. And then you say, no, they are not the problem. And finally you realize the biggest thing you are holding is your body. You're holding to your body. And then you realize that I am holding to my feelings. This is what I have. This is what I want. All the other things that children or the properties, wife or cars, all those things. You only to support this what I am. So those things cannot be given up by giving up the car or the house or the wife or the children or anything else. It is this body. And the feeling and the perception and your volition, your habitual tendencies, whatever you do, your consciousness. Those things not easy to give up. So this whole Dhamma discussion over here, you see, about the matter, about the feeling, about the perception, about the volition, formation and consciousness. Those other things, all other things we are talking about is coming under these things, but they are not the biggest. So eventually when you even get rid of these things, let's say you get rid of these things and you get rid of the sensual desire by attainment, and let's say you get rid of the anger by attainment, by becoming a never return, and still there is something called asmima, conceit I am. So there is this asmiti man, conceit I am, and there is this asmiti chanda, that is this desire for I am, and asmiti anusaya, that is this the latent tendency for this I am, is within you. Look at that, how big it is. He got rid of the sensual desire, he got rid of the anger, he got rid of this the sakkaya ditti about this body, you know, that this particular person, that I am here. But still there is this thing. So it's only the Arahant get rid of all those. So this is that bad. So Buddha is actually asking us not to give up everything at once and sort of thing. Buddha asking us to understand that this is how you come to be. By following this process, I seek delight in form, I welcome it, I remain holy to it. By doing this one, this delight in form arises. So I cling into this thing, and there is this existence of that same clinging within me, and therefore I am born. With the birth, I have all these struggles. So, and then Buddha says, the cessation part. One does not seek delight in form, does not welcome it, does not remain holy to it. So there is no desire now, there is no clinging for that form. With the cessation of that clinging, comes the cessation of this existence, that clay craving does not exist for that particular form. And therefore that he won't be born. So it has to be generalized to for the matter, feeling, the perception, volition, formation and consciousness. So understanding this one, first understanding this one, lead to understand the impermanent nature. Because that we sort of think that there is I am, this is my leg, this is my head, this I am talking, this is my consciousness and all those things. Unless one thoroughly understands this is a process, it's a simple process that I have been doing for many, many eons. Therefore now I have the perception that I am. So having when one understands this one is just like a vending machine. You put a coin over there and then you press a button. When you put a coin, that machine is not thinking that I got a coin, I'm happy about the coin or things like that. So that person is asking for chocolate. Machine is not even thinking that I'm giving chocolate, I'm sad or anything like that. But simply you can observe that machine is changing its state from one to another, accepting state and giving state. So it's just the state changes. Like that we have eye, and there is form, the eye consciousness arises. And there is this ear and the nose, so you can see that, yeah, and the sound, so your consciousness arises. So one change to another is just simply a process that changing from one to another. Until you understand this is so, this is just a process. I have been following this one for many, many years. This is what has happened, and this is what is happening for anybody else in the world. Well, by that time you destroy this, the identity view in the sense of this sakkaya ditti, that when there is this matter, feeling, perception and original formation, that there is this I am. That part has to be destroyed first. It's not by giving up. It is by understanding. It is by wisdom. It is by seeing. So once you have got that one, then you understand you part of the ignorance. Still you are not fully enlightened. It's just you have seen a glimpse of truth about the suffering. And you have seen the glimpse of truth about the impermanent nature, not fully impermanent nature. So he has seen part of it. Because of this wisdom, it is working in the brain all the time. And then you are aware of the suffering more often than before. So now you are thinking properly. But still you might cling to certain things. But it doesn't matter because you are not going to the bad level. You might cling very heavily now. But with that person having developed mind up to that level, he is not clinging very heavily. He is light. His mind is light regarding those things. So, if he is not getting something, it's fine. I don't care because he knows other happiness and he is settled with him. So eventually, so Buddha said that person only living for seven more births, not more than seven. within that 7 period, he will somehow get out of the remaining thing. So that's the stream mentor. So once return can make it in another birth, the never return is not coming back to this world, sensual world at all. And then the arahant is, you know, thus finished, and they have the immense happiness. And so the developing this liberation is the one that one has to do, and it is fantastic if you develop that liberation.
And again, it's a big determination too. Otherwise, you can't hang on to that.
Yes.
At any time, you can drop it.
Mm.
And so, it is. So because you are.
Well, that's proportional to how much suffering you have seen, how much suffering you experience now, how much suffering you have experienced before, how much wisdom you have to understand that this I was suffering for all the time without me knowing. So it's all suffering here. It's suffering everywhere.
And again, look at seeing the danger, isn't it? That's the biggest thing, I mean.
Yes, impermanent nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of that one, there is suffering.
Mm.
Not knowing that one, one would actually think, because it is all right now. I got a job, I got a house, I got something to eat. So, and I have the permanent idea that this is going to be remain like that one. You know, my feeling is going to remain like that one. And all of a sudden, earthquake, or, you know, something will happen, and then you would realize then what that it is. And even for the earthquakes, some people don't bother. So it's not worth going on in this samsara from birth to birth, because it's all suffering. And there's immense happiness by liberating. Even you go into the first jhana concentration level, you can see how much happiness there compared to what you have so far in the ordinary life. And then you go into second jhana concentration, you are more happier. The third, more. Fourth, if you go to seventh level and close to the liberation level as well, it is more and more happier. And when you actually reach that stage, and then regarding those sensual pleasures or those other things, then you say, well, what is this compared to that? And then you have the ability to get rid of these tiny little things. And you wonder, why I was suffering this much? In my life, it's just this sensual desires and the anger. They didn't do anything to me. It's just little satisfaction.
And again, it's better to try to do that rather than going to the hell, knowing that, not that you are going to suffer, knowing that it is very difficult to come out. And that's the biggest feeling I got to. When I wanted, not that the suffering that you get when you go to hell, but it is the thinking that how are you going to get out of that?
Well, that suffering is immense.
Yeah, but it's more than that. But if you have done something that's going to happen, but
I see what you mean.
The problem is,
I see what you mean, but it is that one plus the other one.
Mm.
It is so much suffering. Because you have not seen the suffering in the hell. You haven't felt it, really felt it. Even in this life, as a human being, you have not went into that level of suffering so far. The pains. Buddha said that those beings cannot tolerate the pain. They wish, let me die because of this. They die, but they are born again.
Is there a form in hell?
Form? Yes, yes, they have the bodies. Yes, yes. There are 126 those hells in the hell, 126 sort of worlds or whatever. Yeah, it's biggest. Well, you all have been there before. Okay, I think we'll stop for today.
Yeah.